Good afternoon, and welcome to the Center for American Progress conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Peirce. You may begin your conference.
Thanks, everyone, for joining the Center for American Progress call today on the economy that works for everyone. My name is Andrea Peirce. I'm the Vice President for Communications here at the Center for American Progress. If you have any questions after the call, I'd be happy to answer those. My email is apurse@americanprogress.org. Joining the call today is Mary Kay Henry, who's the International President of the Service Employees International Union, Neera Tanden, who's president of the Center for American Progress, and Nick Hanauer, a Seattle-based entrepreneur and capitalist and author.
Thanks, everyone. I just want to frame this. This is Neera Tanden, the new president of the Center for American Progress. I think the reason why we're doing this call is because we want to call attention to a variety of efforts to redress the fact that our economy is not working for most Americans, and that the American people are aware that it's not working for most Americans, that there's greater concern about inequality than there has been in several years, and that there's a growing movement and call for action to address inequality. And we are focused today on bringing solutions to those challenges. And let me just set out a few facts for everyone. The top 1% of Americans own 40% of our country's wealth, while the bottom 80% own only 7%. The richest 1% earned $1 out of every $4 in 2007, 30 years earlier. The richest only made $1 out of every $11. And 1 in 4 millionaires pay less taxes than 10 million Americans in the middle class. And today, as Washington debates continue to focus on how the American people, not focus on the American people, but focus on protecting the richest 1%. We wanted to call attention to these sets of issues and focus on how the public is moving in a different direction from where Washington is. And with that, let me introduce Mary Kay Henry to speak about what's been happening at the ballot box and in the streets and what's actually energizing the American people today. Mary Kay?
Thanks, Neera. I'm delighted to join you and Nick on this call because we know in our bones that American people have had enough and that all of those facts that you just explained, I think, are now being understood not as the problem of individual people not being able to find work in this country, but as a failure of our nation to respond to the economic emergency that we are experiencing because of that huge income inequality. So as people have had their wages cut, are paying more for health care, have had their homes taken, or are trying to find full-time work that they can support their families on, I've been incredibly inspired by how the majority of Americans are standing up and speaking out about this inequality. As far back as August, thousands of Americans made their voices heard by sitting in at congressional offices around the theme that we wanted to get back to work. We don't want to continue to cut core social programs that create some common good in our country. And then that was followed in November by students, seniors, union, and non-union workers, and other Ohioans uniting at the ballot box to say no to Governor Kasich's law to undermine the middle class in Ohio and to say yes to the collective bargaining rights of nurses, teachers, and firefighters. And then today in Alabama, workers, clergy, and civil rights leaders are announcing a broad new coalition to overturn a hateful immigration law that also devastates the Alabama economy by having crops rot in the field. And then as you and I and all the people on this call know, all of us have been energized and mobilized in every corner of the country by the Occupy movement. Because what the Occupy movement did, I think, for all of us was prick the conscience of a nation that knew that something was wrong but didn't know who to hold responsible for it and what to do about it. And that's why I was inspired just this past Thursday during a National Day of Action where we joined with thousands of other people who took to decaying bridges all across this country to demand good jobs. and an economy that benefits the 99% in this country. I was proud to stand at the Brooklyn Bridge and take the unusual step of civil disobedience and being arrested with community leaders, other leaders of our union, with members, many of whom had never been arrested before, because people believe that that level of sacrifice and dedication is required in this moment to get our elected officials and CEOs to understand that we need to get back to work in the millions and that we are capable of a nation as making that happen. So that's why I'm delighted to be joining you, Neera, and Nick on this call today to keep this conversation going, because it's completely possible for us to solve it in the next 30 days. And I keep holding out to every worker that I meet with, there is no reason on God's green earth that 15 million people can't be back to work this January if we made a decision as a nation that that was our top priority.
And thanks so much, Mary Kay. So in that vein, the Center for American Progress today released 9 ideas for the 99%, and it's focused really on how Congress and the president could take action today to redress the rising inequality in our country and the crushing burden of debt that's facing both students and middle-class families in the economy. And so I'm just going to quickly run through those ideas, because I think they give you a flavor of how, it is, again, how off track Washington is in continuing to debate austerity measures alone and not debating the challenges that families are facing. The ideas that we've put forward are centered around reducing student debt and holding colleges accountable, easing the crushing debt burden of mortgages, calling on the administration and Congress to take real action to ensure that we're dealing with underwater mortgages. Repealing the Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, and I think that demonstrates how, again, out of step the supercommittee was and the conservatives on the supercommittee in trying to ensure that we would lock in lower rates for the highest income Americans instead of trying to ensure that they all paid their fair share. Another idea is to rein in government giveaways to corporations in the top 1%. We have $130 billion in annual tax expenditures benefiting businesses and industries. And again, this was not something that the supercommittee or Congress is debating, but something that needs to happen to ensure that the game is no longer rigged only for corporations and the very wealthy instead of focusing on a fair tax system for all Americans. Another idea is to require Wall Street to contribute to the middle-class recovery. We talk in detail about a financial transaction tax to ensure that, Wall Street is actually at the table helping pay for what has been rot in the last 4 years in the economy, and additionally to regulate banks and financial firms to protect consumers, which great work done in Dodd-Frank, and we're facing fights every day to ensure the proper implementation of that. In addition, we have proposals to protect middle-class wages, ensuring that we have a rise in the minimum wage, giving workers a voice through the Employee Free Choice Act, as well as other measures, and finally, help Americans get back to work by passing the American Jobs Act, as well as other ideas to ensure that we have growth. And I think one of the hearkening aspects, the one thing that we are optimistic about is that the conversation in Washington has dramatically shifted, at least on one side of the aisle, towards a conversation on jobs. And while both sides of the aisle haven't moved forward on jobs, we are appreciative that at least the president and congressional Democrats are trying to push forward on a jobs agenda. And with that, I'd like to introduce Nick Hanauer, who is a Seattle-based entrepreneur and venture capitalist and author. Nick was the first non-family investor in Amazon, and he has a great book that he's just published that I hope he'll tell us about. Nick?
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to be on this call. So just a word about me. I've been doing business my whole life. I've run tiny little companies like nightclubs and retail businesses, and I've run medium companies like my family business, which is a $300 million manufacturer of home textiles and home furnishings, And I've done bigger things like Amazon.com or a company I founded called Aquantive that became essentially the biggest internet advertising company in the world before we sold it to Microsoft in 2007 for $6 billion. So I have a really broad range of business experience. And what I'd like to do today is to challenge orthodoxy and start by way of example, and that is that for however long you think human beings have been conscious, 10,000 or 100,000 years or whatever it is, it's worth noting that for 99% of that time, people looked up into the sky and they saw the sun circling the earth. And they were positive it was true, and yet it is not. In fact, the earth circles the sun. And the same way today, there's this orthodoxy that you find everywhere in America, that the top 1% or business people like me create jobs. And this is almost a belief that is held with religious fervor on the right. And my message today is that that's not true. That business people and the top 1% no more create jobs than squirrels created evolution or rocks created gravity. They are involved, but jobs are part of a feedback loop. They are actually the product of what happens when customers, consumers, hopefully middle class consumers, buy things from businesses. And in this sense, middle class consumers are the true job creators in our economy. When the middle class thrives, business booms. And the only thing that matters to companies by at least a factor of 10 is the degree to which people are buying things from them. When more people buy things from them, they hire, and when fewer people buy things from them, they fire. And nothing else matters. Regulation doesn't matter. Government intrusion rarely matters. The only thing that matters is customers. And so the reason I'm on this call is that for 30 years we have built an economy which essentially structurally impoverishes everyone except people like me. And this insidious accumulation of wealth at the top and impoverishment of everyone else feels good to the people at the very tippy top in the beginning, but eventually it eats itself. Our economy is struggling today because most people don't have any money to spend on stuff anymore. And that is a consequence of systematically building an economy designed to enrich a tiny few and impoverish everyone else. And so, in that sense, it is insanely, criminally stupid to continue to drop the tax burden, to do two things at once, to push income from the middle class to the top, and it's basically the income at the top has tripled or quadrupled the last 30 years, while it's essentially remained static or gone down for everybody else, while simultaneously dropping the rate at which you tax that income at the top by 60 or 70%. And in so doing, make it impossible to invest in the middle class, or as I like to call them, my customers, in ways that make it impossible for them to continue to buy stuff from me. And so in this sense, this ridiculous, crazy dedication to continuing to make taxes on the rich lower and to continue to impoverish ordinary working Americans isn't just bad for ordinary Americans. Ultimately, it's horrible for people who are running businesses. And so, if there was a shred of truth to these arguments, you would see some evidence for the success of lowering tax rates. But for instance, since 1995, the tax rate on people like me has fallen from something like 30.5% to 22%, while the unemployment rates have doubled. And if it was true that lowering taxes on rich people was good for the economy, our economy would be booming today. And yet it is not, because lowering tax rates on the richest people, you know, forecloses the possibility of investing in the country in a way that can sustain profitability and prosperity.
Great, so, Nick. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Nick.
No, that's it. That's my pitch.
Thanks so much, Nick. Now we'd like to open it up for questions. If people can identify themselves, that would be great.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question is from the line of Michael Rose from BNA.
Hi there. Thanks for the call. I wanted to ask President Henry if she could talk a little bit about if there are any specific things the union is doing to raise awareness of these income inequality issues among its members.
We have done a Economics 101 training beginning in March of last year for 2,000 of our members that has then moved to 20,000, and our goal is to get to 200,000, and it gets updated all the time. But I have to tell you, the best education our members have been getting about income inequality has been by joining the encampments around the country. We have many members that were drawn to the Occupy movement, and I would say in the last 2 months that all of the education we've done got turbocharged by this uprising that occurred in cities and communities all across this country.
Great, thank you.
Other questions?
We have a question from the line of Mark Gruenberg, Press Associate.
This is a follow-up question from Mary Kay. Talk a little bit about the next move in this, since there was a squib that appeared in the Washington Post over the weekend that the service employees and the communications workers are planning yet another Occupy encampment, Occupy Congress.
Well, we have been working with community allies in cities and states across the country about how to keep the focus on the issues that both Neera and Nick have talked about. And so we, along with the CWA and Center for Community Change, Move On, and lots of organizations, have made a decision that we need to take back the Capitol and make what Nick said, the idea that there are people in the 1% that are willing to pay their fair share. We just need the Republican leadership and conservatives in Congress to answer the call in this country, and we want them to have to stare unemployed workers in the face and explain why it is not possible to make a set of decisions in Congress that where we can get back to work in January.
When are we gonna see this on the Capitol lawn?
People are mobilizing between December 6th and December 9th.
Okay.
And we hope to set up a people's camp around the Capitol.
Any idea how many SEIU people
we
will
don't.
Be there? Yeah.
We are just now collecting that after having been part of the bridge actions. Our locals are now in conversations, and so I assume we will know that by the week after Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Great. I think that ends our call. I know that we had limited time. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll get the tape and transcript of this around as well. Thanks so much. Thanks, Mary Kay. Thanks, Nick.
You bet.
Thank you.
You.